All right, let's get started. So welcome to CS50's walkthrough for problem set 4. This is the Sudoku problem set. Before I begin, you should know that the purpose of PSET 3 was pretty much a warm-up for PSET 4. So if there are any lingering questions about PSET 3, let's take care of those first. Because you'll find that it's a lot of the same stuff coming up again. So if you're unclear about it, let's clarify things. Anything about how to use the board, anything like that. Okay, cool. So now we're going from 15 to Sudoku. So Sudoku is more fun to play. You never hear about people playing 15. You do hear about people playing Sudoku. So it's more interesting to implement because you can actually give it to your roommate to play with. But at the same time, it's a lot harder to implement. So we have a lot of things to go through today. This is our agenda here. We're going to go through, you have a lot of distribution code for this problem set. I think it's about 600 lines, if I'm not mistaken, of distribution code. So this is good news because this is code that you don't have to write. This is code that's already been done for you, and that allows a lot of things in the game that you don't have to worry about because it's just in the code. But it's bad news because you do need to understand what's going on in these 600 lines. So we're going to kind of look at that today. Let's see a show of hands. I know what your answer is going to be. So I can either go through all the source code with you through these 600 lines, kind of try to explain what each one does, or I can talk about the parts that you guys are going to have to implement and how to implement them. So I'm not even going to take a vote. I think that you guys would prefer the latter. Yes? Okay. so much for that. I realized from doing this last year that it was really, really difficult to implement these functions, and I think that I'm going to be able to make it a little bit easier for you guys. So we're kind of going to breeze through the distribution code, and that means that you guys are going to be responsible after this to really go back and look at it, because the more time you try to cut out up front by not looking at this source code, the more time you're going to need to go back later and spend and make mistakes and stuff like that. So trust me, you're not taking any sort of shortcut by not looking through the distribution code. I know it's 600 lines, I know it's intimidating, but the problem set spec does a really, really good job of going through this distribution code. Okay, so you should look at it, you should read along with the problem set as it goes through it. So this is what the game's going to look like. I don't know if you guys have read the problem set and seen this image, but we have color now, and this is much more impressive looking than our game of 15. And actually, this is already done for you. So what you see on the screen now, you don't have to worry about implementing. It's already done for you. All you're going to have to do, I think, is change the name, and you can change around some of the colors, make it prettier. But essentially, you have your game board. So that's one step out of the way. And then this is what we're going to go over today. We're going to go over this thing called ncurses, which is what enables us to have this color and these features, even though we are inside the terminal or in PuTTY for some of you. We're going to have to implement a function that moves the cursor, because right now, as the game is, you can just look at it, and that's all you can do. You can't move the cursor. So we're going to implement something that moves the cursor, and we're going to allow our user to change, we're going to allow them to change the numbers that they've already put in to other numbers, or we're going to allow them to change blank spaces to other numbers. But we will not allow them in the game to change numbers that came with the board. Okay, so that's another thing we have to worry about. We're going to allow them to replace blanks with numbers, like I said, and we're going to check if their move is invalid, and we'll get to how a move can be invalid later, and then we're going to check if they won the game. So these are the parts that you guys actually have to do. So that's what we're going to go through. So the first part is ncurses. So ncurses is a library that we're going to include on top, and it's already been included, so you don't have to worry about it. And like I said, it allows you to change the colors of your program, make it more personal, and it also allows you to have a cursor there. Now, the cursor is for you and for your user. So your user can move the cursor through the board game in order to play the game, but you also need the cursor so that you can update things. So when you did 15, I don't know if any of you, while you were playing the game 15 and testing it, if you scrolled up in your terminal window, like not just with the arrows, but on your keyboard, but actually scrolled up using the sidebar, you would have seen a lot of different 15 games happening. And that's because every single time you made a move in 15, it redrew the entire board. Because we're using ncurses now, we don't have to do that. All we have to do is refresh the board. And this refresh is already done for you in the distribution code. So you don't have to worry about it. You just need to know that that's what's going on. So we're not redrawing the board every time. So this is a much more efficient way of doing it. And that's what we can do. We're updating the board using ncurses. curses. So let's go into the... Okay, so this is my terminal, and I have Sudoku open, and one of the things you can do, you see here on the bottom, N starts a new game, R restarts the current game, and Q quits. So I'm going to hit Q so that we can exit out of that. You see it says, okay, thanks, bye, and then you're at your prompt again. So let's look in this directory and see what there is. Okay, so we have, there are three levels to the game, if you haven't read the problem set yet. The two levels that are played that your user is going to have to choose from are noob and leet. So noob is N, where is it? Noob is N, double O, B, leet is L, 3-3-T. I don't know if you remember this from the cakes on the first day of lecture, but that's that. And then there's this debug version. The debug version will help you immensely because when you're implementing your win function, you're going to have to check if it works. So you're going to have to actually win the game in order to check your win function. So last year, this year you have it easy because you have this debug, these debug puzzles that are really easy to solve, only take a few numbers to be put in to be solved, and then you check your win function. But last year when we did it, it was the first year of the problem set existed, and so we actually had to win the Sudoku game in order to test our win function. So I, for example, was in the science center basement at 4 o'clock in the morning on a Thursday night. Win is the last function you implement, so I implemented win, and I was ready, and I really wanted to turn it in, and I obviously was not going to solve the Sudoku puzzle at that time. So I went on Google, and I found a puzzle, puzzle where you input whatever values are already there, and it gives you the solution. So I say, oh my gosh, I can't even read these numbers anymore, I'm so tired, I give them to my friend. Can you read these numbers off to me, and I'll put them in. So I put in all but the last number, and then I put in the last number, and my win function does nothing. It doesn't say that I've won, but I just put in all the correct answers. So I thought that I'd have to go back and rewrite my win function. Turns out my friend who's reading the numbers to me read the last number incorrectly to me in order to get me into this panic. So I actually had the right win function but couldn't test it because my friend was mean. This time, you guys won't run into those kinds of problems. So that's why you have the debug level, and you'll be really grateful for that. So inside those bins, those .bin files are these games. So there's, I think, 1,024 games in each level. Or maybe not in the debug level. Debug level, no. But in Leet and Noob, there's that many games. So when your user tries to play a game, they can either specifically declare, here, so if we do Sudoku, it tells us the usage. And the usage is Sudoku, and then you either choose noob or leet, and then there's an optional number. So noob or leet is the level. You have to put that. And then you have in the optional argument is the number of the board, of the actual board that you want to play. So let's say you couldn't solve number 42 before. So if you couldn't solve game number 42 before, you want to try it again, you can actually go back to game 42. If you don't put anything there, it's going to be this pseudo-random board is going to be accessed. So that's how that works. Now, the game Sudoku, does everyone know it at all? It's okay, you don't have to know how to play Sudoku. I mean, you do have to know to do the problem set, but you don't need to know right at this moment. So I don't know where to write on the board. Okay, Okay, so, ta-da! The board appeared. Okay, so this is our Sudoku board, and I completely forgot what I was supposed to say. Okay, right, how do you play Sudoku? So you're going to have numbers inside this board to begin with. When you're given the board, it's going to have numbers already implemented in it, already in the board. So what the user has to do is put in all the remaining numbers in such a way that there is never two of the same number in any one box. Box being this beautiful entity here, or in any single column or row. So for example, if we take this box right here, there can only be 1, 1, 1, 2, 1, 3, 1, 4, 1, 5, up to 9 in this box. So they have to be like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. But they will never line up like that, as you'll see. And then you can't have, if you have a 2 right here, you can't have another 2 anywhere in this box. You can't have another 2 anywhere in this row, and you can't have another 2 anywhere in this column. So that's sort of how, if you were to go about making this game or solving this game, you would know never to put two 2s in the same column or in the same row in the same box. So that's the whole idea of Sudoku. Any questions about the game itself? Okay, cool. So we have our board, as we saw. Let's get this back on. All right, cool. What's that on top? Okay, cool. All right, so, ooh, that's really big. Okay, cool. All right, so now we're in our file here. So we see that we have Sudoku.c and Sudoku.h. It's a little bit cut off, but there is a .h at the end over there. So let's first look at Sudoku.h because this is a lot less code, as you're about to see. So Sudoku.h. And in here is where you guys are supposed to change the name to your name. So here the author is John Harvard. You're going to change it to your name. You can change the title of your game. So let's go ahead and change this. Let's change this to Walkthrough Kids. Let's change this to Our Puzzle. And, okay, so these are colors, so you can change the colors as much as you want. So let's say, then they're all the colors are in pairs of foreground and background. That's what FG and BG are here. So you always have to make the pair. So the background, if you make it white, then that'll just be what your terminal is as it is. In this case, the background was black and the color of the foreground was cyan, and that's for the banner. The banner we haven't put up yet, so now we wouldn't see a change, but the grid's colors were just black and white. The border's colors were were white and red. So we can change this to, someone give me a color.
Green.
We're going to make this pretty hideous. The logo's colors, the background could be
fuchsia.
I don't think they have fuchsia. let's try pink. I don't know if they have, oh, maybe they have magenta. Let's try pink. All right, let's see how this looks. Now we're going to make, right, because we have another make file. Oh, no, there's no pink. What are we going to do now? We have to change it to something else. They might have magenta or something. Actually, in the problem set spec, it tells you exactly what colors these things come with. Oh, here. Oh, magenta. We have to use magenta in that case. So I'm going to change the color to magenta. Now we're going to make. And now we're going to run Sudoku Noob. Oh, that's pretty ugly. All right, but you get the idea. So this is what you're going to have to do. Boom, in 5 minutes, you're done with the first your first part of the problem set. And then this projector. All right, so now we get to, now we're going to have to look, unfortunately, at Sudoku.c, which is a little bit intimidating, as you're about to see. It's 653 lines long, so it's a bit long. These are all the libraries that are being included in here. As you can see, one of them is the ncurses library. Now, the ncurses library is what's allowing us to change the colors, like we already said, and it's allowing us to use the cursor. Now, this you're going to want to walk through. It's all pretty well commented. The one thing that I'll walk you through, especially, is this idea of a struct. So structs should be covered this week in lectures and sections, but structs are sort of like wrappers for common variables. So if any variables have a lot to do with each other, they can all be considered in this struct. It's absolutely not necessary. It doesn't have to be that way in this case, but it's just much more elegant that way. So we have the name of our struct is down here. It's G. And it's a global variable. So this entire struct is defined before the main function. It's defined here, and then you have prototypes, and only then do you have the main function. So since it's outside the main, it's a full of global variables. It's a global struct. So you can think of G as global, or you can think of G as game. But the way you access each element of this struct is by doing G dot, and then each of these variable names. So G dot level. G dot board, G dot number, and that means the game's level, which is either going to be noob or leet, and it's a char star. What's a char star?
String.
Right. So you'll notice, I think, that CS50's library is gone. Yeah, CS50's library is gone. So you no longer have string. Now you have char star. And you no longer have get int. It's something called scanf now, but you don't need to implement it in this problem set. So you're just going to have that as part of the distribution code. It's already going to be done for you. But yeah, so now every time you want to refer to the level or the board or the board's number, all these things are going to be g dot and whatever the variable name is. So the ones you're especially going to need are board and y and x. So board is what data structure? Two-dimensional array, exactly. And where have you seen this before? 15, exactly. So it's exactly like in 15, except it's not just board. And then the two parts of the array, it's g dot board. So don't forget g dot, because that's how you're going to access that. So that's the board. That's the place you are in the two-dimensional array. And then you have y and x, which is the cursor's current location. So you're always going to want to remember the cursor's location. And the thing about ncurses is anytime you want to change something on the screen, like if you want to put up a banner or something like that, your cursor is actually going to go to where that banner is, put up the banner, and then if you don't return the cursor to where it was before, and then your user starts trying to move around or put in numbers, your user is going to be moving around where your banner is. And he's going to be putting random numbers over in our magenta area. So we don't want that. So every time you move the cursor anywhere to put in a banner, to check a number, something like that, after that you need to return the cursor. And luckily for you, you have a function here called showCursor. It's this one right here. And show cursor will return the cursor to where it's supposed to be and then show it there. So you're always going to want to, this is a very useful one, show cursor. So I said g.y, g.x are really important because that's where your cursor is now. So when you want to refer to the part of the board you're at right now, does anyone know how you would do that? If you're in some sort of nested for loop, you're iterating through the board, how do you refer to where you are in the board right now? Or not, in this case, it's not a nested for loop, right? Because we already have this sort of coordinate system for our cursor. So how do you refer to where your cursor is on the board? If g dot y is where the cursor's y coordinate and g dot x is the cursor's x coordinate. How do you refer to where you are on the board?
G dot board.
And then what? Bracket. Can you see this, or do I have to go in the next line? Can you see that? No. All right, so g dot board, bracket what? G dot y, g dot x, exactly. Now you'll notice, yes, it is y and then x, not x and y. I don't know if this tripped you up on 15, because on 15 you also went down first, then you went across. Same thing here. You go down first and then across. So it's not like x, y coordinates that you're used to. So don't get confused. It's the opposite. So it's g dot board, g dot y, g dot x is the current position you're at in the board. So we're no longer using those nested for loops. You might at some point, but for the sole purpose of referring to where you're on the board, you're using this great thing that these globals give us that are the location of the cursor, and that's because of ncurses, because of that. So now we're able to refer to where we are on the board. And we've already changed Sudoku.h, and now we're looking at Sudoku.c. So you'll see the first thing it does, it checks if the arg count is 2 or 3 because we have that optional argument. Then it compares strings. The str comp function compares two strings. If they're exactly equal, it returns 0. If they're not equal, it returns 1 or 2, depending on if you want to actually know what surcomp does, you can look on its man page or you can Google it. But essentially, this is going to check what level the user wants. Then you open the boards of that level. So since there's 1,024 boards, you're going to choose from those. Or if the user provided a specific board, you'll go to that board. All this stuff, then you start up ncurses, and you'll see much more of this. I'm just kind of breezing through it because I want to get to the parts that you actually have to implement. So this starts the game. So when the user's supposed to play, you have this thing called int ch. So ch, and it's inside of it is going to be a character, right? That's why it's called ch, but the reason we're storing it in an int and not a char is because you want to be able to deal with just the ints. You want to be able to deal with their like ASCII values and stuff like that. So we're calling, don't think that that's a mistake. It is an int, this data type. And ch is what the user is going to put in, because you see here ch equals get ch. So get ch is a lot like when we had get int and stuff like that. So that's going to be what the user is going to type at places of the board. So again, this is kind of confusing. You don't have to implement this. You just have to know that ch is what is the number that the user is pressing when they want to put things on the board. You want when the user wants to do anything. So if the user wants to restart the game, quit the game, start a new game, they can type lowercase n, but the only thing that's going to trigger a new game is uppercase n. So that's why, because we don't want to have twice as many conditions to check, oh, is it a lowercase n? Is it an uppercase n? Is it lower or uppercase? So we just force everything to be an uppercase letter that the user puts in. And then we have this thing called a switch statement. So the switch statement takes a variable, so in this case it's ch, and then it does a different thing for each case. Now the case is what ch is equal to. So this is the same thing as saying, like for case n, that's the same thing as if ch equals n, then do this. And then case r, if ch equals r, do this. But the cases are really elegant in this way, so it's really good that we're using them. And here you see if case n, if the user types n, that means you want to start a new game. That's what n is supposed to mean, r is supposed to restart the game, stuff like that. So now you'll notice at the end of each of these cases, it says break. You need to have a break at the end of every case statement, because otherwise it'll just keep going and do everything under it. So if you don't have these breaks, this is also a good midterm thing or quiz question. They'll ask you what's wrong with this switch statement, and oftentimes what's wrong with it is that you're not breaking out of it, so it'll do everything under it. So you have to remember to break. And then control L, it lets the user redraw the screen, etc. And it logs it, this function do while loop will log all of the activity, and this is just so that we can automate tests of your code. So you don't have to worry about this. You don't need to really understand what log move does. Just know that you cannot alter log move in any way, because then we won't be able to automate tests of your code. Okay, so you see that this is a do while loop, and it does it while ch not equal to q. And q is what you do if you want to quit the game. So it's going to keep doing this until the user quits the game. So it's going to keep sort of listening for the user's input. It's going to listen for the user to do something. Now, what do you want the user to be able to do that the user is not able to do right now? So let's open up Sudoku. Sudoku, let's do a leet version. Oh, it's so ugly. Okay. Anyway, so now what should I do? Someone tell me what to do. How do we start playing this game? What should I do? Okay, I'm going to enter a number. Nothing happened. All right, let me try to go to a different box and enter a number. Uh-oh, I can't move at all. My cursor is stuck. So this is your first task on this problem set. You need to make the cursor move. So now where's a good way that we can make this cursor... Where's a good place that we can make this cursor move in Sudoku.c? Where can we make the cursor move? How is the user going to move the cursor? What are they going to do?
Arrow keys.
What did you say?
Arrow keys.
Arrow keys, exactly. So where can we sort of listen for these arrow keys to get pressed? Here. Oh, what a coincidence that we're right there now. Yeah, exactly. So here you're already listening for N and R and control L. Now you might as well listen for the keys. Now you should know that the keys are as follows. So there's a case key up, which is the up arrow. There's a case key down, which is the down arrow, et cetera, et cetera. Now I'm going to switch to my slides instead of typing this in code. Here we're doing moving the cursor. You can have multiple cases, and then underneath them you can do this for both of those cases. Then there's also a default option if you need it. You might not use it at all. That does this if all of the cases fail. And make sure to break between cases. I'll read it. Right, so we have key up, key down, key left, key right, in order to move the keys. And then, so that's how we're going to listen for the user input. So if user types case key up, then what do we want to do? Well, we know that our current, the current spot on the board where our cursor is g.board, g.y, g.x. So now, what do we want to do if the user hits key up? Exactly. If the user hits up, then you want to do g.y minus minus, right? Because you want to decrement g.y to make the cursor go up one. Okay, so if you wanted to go to the right one, what would you do? If your user typed key right, you would do key.x plus plus, right, to move right. Left is g.x minus minus, down is g.y plus plus. Okay? Let me make sure I didn't tell you that wrong. G.y might be, because in 15 we had g.y increasing as it went down, but I think that in N curses, well, you'll play around with it, but it might be that in N curses going down actually increases g.y, I mean decreases g.y. So just look at it, play around with it, see what happens when you decrease g.y. And then, like I said, every time you move the cursor anywhere, it's going to stay there unless you tell it to come back. So you're going to need to show your cursor at the end of most of the times that you use the cursor. So this is just a reminder there, not necessarily in this case at all. Like when you're writing these case statements, you don't need to show your cursor, but just as a reminder, now that we're talking about the cursor, you will need to do that. Any questions about moving your keys? I mean, moving your cursor with the keys. It's really pretty simple. You listen for the user to put up, down, left, and right, and depending on what they do, you change the global variables g.y, g.x based on that. Now, there is an additional feature. So on the prompt set, you have to implement all the mandatory required features, and then you can choose one of the optional features to implement. The one I implemented last year was the one that your cursor can wrap around the board. So if you wanted to make your cursor wrap around the board, what would you want to think at this point what to do if you're at g.y equals equals 8, which is the last part, right? This is 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. If you're at 8, where do you want to go? 0, if you're wrapping around. So you might want to think about that here if that's going to be the optional feature you put in, but it doesn't have to be. You can choose anyone that you like from the problem set spec. Okay, so now we're moving around the board and we want to be able to put in new values. Now, before we allow our user to put in a new value anywhere, we want to make sure that they're able to change that value. So they are not allowed to change any number that was in the original board. So that was when they started the problem, because then, of course, they could just change the whole board. There'd be no point of the game. So just like when you do Sudoku on paper, you can't change what's already written. You can't change it here either. So you want to prevent the user from replacing original characters, or original numbers, and you also want to prevent your user from playing the game after it's already been won. So before you make any changes, you want to have a condition that checks if the game is won and if the location that the cursor is at right now is part of the original board or not. So how can you check if something is part of the original board? Exactly. So the answer is to make a copy of the original board. So before you start replacing anything with anything, make a copy by going through and iterating through each box with your nested for loops. Iterate through each box and make a copy into a new two-dimensional array of everything that's inside the original board when you got it. And then when you want to check if it was part of the original board, you can check if it was a zero in the original board, because all the zeros in the original board are the spaces that you're allowed to fill in. Question?
Are we allowed to use functions within the library that we're using that do those kinds of things, like copying an array into another array?
Yeah, if you can find, the question was, can you use functions inside of libraries that do these sorts of things, like copying things into other arrays, then yes. If you can find a function that does that. But it's also just a really simple nested for loop that you guys have done maybe 20 times in 15 and in Mario and all that stuff. So you should just copy everything over into a duplicate And then check in that duplicate, which you never alter. So you check in that duplicate if the value that your cursor's on right now is equal to zero, and then you can change it. Then it's okay to change. Same thing when you implement your won function. Before you change anything, you want to make sure the game isn't already won. So these are your conditions before you change anything. Okay, so... Oh, hey, I asked you guys what you can do to make sure you don't replace an original that said it right here. Make a copy of the board at the start. So that's that. But you do want to be able to replace blanks and non-original numbers. So you're going to have a function which takes one argument, which is that ch. And yes, you can probably write this all inside your main function. You can write if case key up, do this, case left, do this, case one, do this, case three, do this. But it's much better if you outsource these to a function. So this could be a function that's like something called like change number or something, or change value or insert number, whatever you want. And this function is going to take whatever you want to replace the current number with, and only after it's passed that check that it's not part of the original board and that it's not the game hasn't been won, it's going to actually make the change. So ch is the argument that this function is going to take, and that ch can be anything really, but the things that you're going to want to look for is if it's a zero, if it's a period, so if it's a dot, if it's key backspace or key DC, which is the delete command, then you want to set that value, the value at the place in the board where you are right now when that command comes in, so that's g.board, g.y, g.x, to zero. So that's all you have to do. If they type any of these things, you change that part of the board to zero. Then, if ch is numerical, so if it's from 1 to 9, so you're going to have cases for all this stuff. So you're going to have like a case 1, case 2, case 3. The only problem is these cases, when they come in, are coming in as the ASCII values of the numbers. So when you have case 1, that's not actually going to check if these are typed a 1. That's going to check, you're going to put it in single quotes, so it's going to check for the ASCII value of 1. So then if you try to store that in your board, you're going to end up storing not the 1. You're going to end up printing whatever ASCII value of 1 is. And I don't know it off the top of my head, but it's not 1. So how can you get these ASCII values without looking at the slide? How can you get these ASCII values of the numbers to the numbers themselves? Okay, with looking at the slide. How do you get the ASCII values 1 through 9 to actually become 1 through 9? Subtract 0. So just like when we were working in Caesar with the alphabetical letters from A to Z, and we wanted to make A 0, to make 1, to make B 1, C 2, etc., we subtracted lowercase a from everything. That's what we're going to do here. We're going to subtract 0. So that 1 becomes a 1, but not just 0. We're not going to do this minus 0, because obviously that's just this. You're going to do minus the ASCII value of 0. So you put it in single quotes to get the ASCII value. So then your case is going to, so again, you're using these switch statements. So it's going to be like case 1. What do you do? If these are types in a 1, so case 1, what do you do? What do you want to do in English? If these are types of 1. If they stand on a certain spot on the board and they type 1, what do you want to do? Right, so put the 1 in where they are on the board right now. So how do we do that in code? How do we refer to where we are right now on the board? Where are cursors? G.board, G.y, G.x. And then how do we put a 0 in that, or how do we put a 1 in that?
Equals 0.
Yeah, equals 0 or equals 1 or whatever you're putting in. Or it can be equals ch, since ch is going to be what the user has just typed in. Okay? And then after this, you're going to call draw numbers, which is going to update the board and actually draw and actually print the number. Alternatively, if you don't want to do draw numbers, I believe you can just do add ch, so ADDCH, and then in parentheses whatever character you're putting in, whatever letter you're putting in there, or number. So don't use printf ever in this problem set. You can't use printf with ncurses. Okay. So you'll see if you, when you go through the source code, you'll see things like mvadch. So things like that are being used as part of ncurses instead of printf. You don't really have to worry about it too much. Just know that printf won't work here. So don't put printf1 because it won't work. So just, you can just put the number 1 inside the array and let draw numbers take care of it for you. Okay, so you just, you're just going to take the value that the user typed in this case statement, and put that in the place where your cursor currently is on the board. Okay, any questions about replacing things on the board? Okay. Now, we have to check, once the user puts something in the board, we have to check if this was a valid move on the user's part or not. So what would make something an invalid move? What would make something an invalid move? Well, you don't actually have to worry about it if it's not one of the boxes on the board, because you're, before you're doing this, you're gonna know where you are on the board. You're gonna know that your cursor is on it, so you don't have to worry about that. What's gonna make it? What makes it an invalid move actually in the game Sudoku? Okay, a number greater than 9, but you're not actually, they can't put in a number greater than 9, right? Because you're only listening for the numbers 1 through 9 in your case statements. So if you don't have a case that's not the number 1 through 9, then when they type it, it's not going to react at all. It's just going to do nothing. Just like before, when they didn't have the case statements, because you guys have to implement them, they didn't have the cases 1 through 9, so I was typing 2, and it just did nothing. So it's not going to react if they don't type what you want them to type. So don't have to worry about that. But just in the game Sudoku, what can be wrong?
If there's a number, if that number is already in the box, if it's in the column.
Exactly. So if the number that they just put in already exists in that very same column, that very same row, or that very same box, you want to warn them by putting up a banner that tells them that this is a this can't be right. They probably messed up somewhere. So they either have to change that number or the other same number in that column, row, or box. So you're gonna, there's already a function show banner, and all you have to do is show banner parentheses and then the string you want to put in. So you should probably have a string that you define separately that says something like, but again, it's not a string, it's a char star, that says like warning, or that says you might not want to put that there, or think again, something like that. And then you do show banner and then the name of that string variable inside, and then you're going to show them that it's invalid. But how are you going to check if it's invalid? How are you going to check? So you're going to want to wrap around from the place you're at in the board right now. You want to start at the one to the right of it and wrap around to the one right before it to check that row. To check that column, you want to start from the one under where you are and wrap around to the top. Now, how do we, and come down to the one right before it? Because you don't want to check it again. Right? And you want to check that the value, if the values match. So if the value that the user just typed in at g.board, g.y, g.x equals the value at any of these, so it's going to be in a for loop, right? Then you want to return, if you're checking if there's an error, then you want to return true, yes, there is an error. Okay, if at any point you find the same number in that column or in that row. Now, how are we going to wrap around? How have we been wrapping around? How do we wrap around in Caesar and Visionaire?
Mod.
Right, so we can use mod to make sure that we wrap around the board. But be careful, like I said again, not to go back to that space in the board. So if you guys can see here, let's say that the user has put in a 5 here. So we want to check, starting from here, does this match? So this 5 is now, if this is where my cursor is, this 5 is represented by g.board, g.y, g.x. So we want to go, in a for loop, we want to go to the right by 1, by 2, by 3, by 4, wrap around 5, 6, 7, 8. So we want to go 8 spaces over and make sure that there's no 5 there. If there is a 5 there, so if these places equal the 5, so equal this, then you want to return true, meaning true there's an error. So when you're checking to see if it's an invalid move, you're going to have something like if error. And error is going to be your function that checks for the error. Okay? So how are you going to move one step, then two steps, then three steps, then four steps? Because you don't want to move your cursor there. You don't want to send your cursor there because you want your cursor to be on the 5 so that you can have the value of 5 in this expression. So how are you going to go over 1? What if you just wanted to go 1 to the right? How would you rewrite this? Okay. Oh, no, I don't want the light. All right, let me see. Maybe if I close this. Oh, perfect. Okay, cool. All right. And this is a joke. All right. Do you guys mind the blue light? No, it's fine. Okay. So how do we change this expression in order to be the one to the right of it? How do we change this expression? Right. So g dot x plus 1. So it would be the one to the right of it would be g dot board, g dot y, g dot x plus 1. Right? And then the next one would be plus 3, plus 4, etc. And again, you're wrapping around, right? So that when it's plus 1, 2, 3, 4, when it's plus 5 in this case, you want it to go back down to 0. So you're going to make, and I'll let you worry about the wrapping around. What's your for loop going to be? If you have an I in this for loop, for example, what's I going to be? What's changing in this situation? If the next one is going to be plus 2, the next one is going to be plus 3. Right, so this value is changing. And how many times? I'm not going to tell you, so think about how many times you want I to increment. So it's actually going to be g dot x plus I, right? Not plus 1, 2, 3. It's going to be g dot x plus, plus I, and you're going to have a mod in there somewhere to make sure it wraps around. So you want to make sure that this does never equals this. If it ever equals, then you're going to want to return true that there's an error and that this is an invalid move. Now for the columns you're doing the same exact thing, but this time you're increasing g dot y. Okay? And you're going to want to wrap around again. So that's how you check the row and the column. Now this is really super tricky. How do you check the box? So how do you check the box? Well, there are probably many ways of doing it. And just as a disclaimer for myself, in these walkthroughs, I sort of give you the way that's simplest to understand and the simplest to explain, but it's not necessarily the best of designs, and it's not necessarily the only way. So you are welcome to take up the challenge of finding a better way even to implement these things. But I'll always give you one way that works and that is safe and that you can use. But just know that you can come up with better ways, and that's all up to you. So now we're in this box and we want to check if we have a 5 anywhere else. So where do we want to start checking in this box? For simplicity's sake, let's just start at the top right corner. So now we have all of these top right corners. These aren't zeros. These are just, I don't know, let's do check marks. So we want to start at these top left corners. Did I say right, left? Okay, top left corners. So take a minute. How can we refer to the top left corner of each box, knowing where our cursor is? So let's do it just not disregarding completely our cursor. What are the coordinates of this box in the array, in the two-dimensional array? What's this? G dot board 0, 0, right? And then what's this? 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Up here we have the same thing, right? So now think about how we can access these pairs. What's going to change about x? Is there a way you can think of mathematically? Or let's do y. So to get 0, to get 3, and to get 6. Based on where our cursor is now. in order to have it in a for loop. So if we're going to have a for loop that's going to go from here, from this spot, it's going to go here, 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 here. How are we going to get it to do that? So in Mario, for example, when we went through like this, or in the game 15, when we were drawing the numbers in this way, we had what kind of structure to draw the numbers in 15? Yeah, so we had nested for loops. So we're going to have the nested for loops again, but that time it was really simple to know where to start and where to end. Here it's a lot harder because we want to make it work for when we're at 0, when we're at 3, and when we're at 6 in the case of y, in g.y. So the way to do it is you take g.y and you divide it by 3. And remember, when we divide like this, we don't get the decimal. So just like in ISBN.c, we didn't have the decimal when we divided by 10. It would just drop off the last number. So we divide by 3. So if we do 0 divided by 3, we're going to get 0. When we do 3 divided by 3, we're going to get 1. 6 divided by 3, we're going to get 2. And then we're going to multiply that by 3. So this seems silly because you're dividing by 3 and then multiplying by 3. But you'll see why it works when you increment in the for loop. So this is what your for loop is going to start as, the one that goes in y. The one that goes in x is going to go the exact same way. So they're going to be nested. So you want to start at this box. You want to start at g.y divided by 3 times 3, which is going to be this, then it's going to be this, then it's going to be this, and for the x's it's going to be this, this, and then this. And then how many spaces do you want to go over in each direction once you're at that box? Once you're in this box, how many spaces over do you want to go? 2. And then 2 down, right? So this for loop is supposed to execute like 3 times, right? From the start, and this is the start of your for loop, and then 2 more times. So it's going to go until, so let's say we have j, then j is less than what? J is less than what? Well, this whole thing plus 3. Right? So it's going to start, j is going to start at this. J is going to increment once. It's going to increment twice. So we want it to go up until j is less than this plus 3. Okay? So that's sort of how you're going to go from here to the right and go and then come back down, go to the right twice, come back down, go to the right twice, and you're going to exit. But now in this case, you don't have the luxury of when you're doing your rows and your columns of missing the 5. So you're going to have to avoid it. You're going to have an if condition somewhere inside this for loop that says, so first you're checking if where you are in the for loop is equal to g.board, g.y, g.x. But then if it is, you have to make sure that that's not g.y, g.x. You have to make sure that that spot in your board right now is not equal to g.y, g.x. So you have to make sure if you're using I and j, if j is your y and x and I is your x, you want to make sure that j does not equal g.y and I does not equal g.x once you find that matching one. Okay? So you want to make sure that you're skipping over this one. So if your program says, oh, I found a 5, which is what you asked me to look for, g.board, g.y, g.x is equal to this, but hey, this is g.board, g.y, g.x. So you want to not, you don't want to return that it's an error if that happened, because that's okay. If it's in the same spot of the board, then that's okay. Okay, so you don't actually have an error there. Any other questions about invalid move? Invalid move questions. It's a little tricky. I'm sorry if I'm not doing an excellent job explaining. I don't know. Yeah.
So the g.y divided by 3 times 3, that could work for us, like, even if we're not in the top last box, but the other boxes.
Well, the thing is, you're going to move, you're going to It doesn't matter where you start. I mean, you could start at any point. You would just have to figure out what its mathematical equivalent is. That's why it's just simple to start at top left. But you don't care when you're checking the box what number the user just put in. You don't care where their cursor is, other than to check that it's not the same box when you find the number that you're looking for. So you just care what number that they just typed in, and you care to check that it's not in the boxes. And so you just want to start at any arbitrary box. Just makes sense to start at top left. Okay. All right, so our last part is to check if the game is won. So one way that you know the game is not won at all is if there are zeros in the board. Because when Sudoku is completely solved, there are no zeros. Every part of the board is filled in from 1 to 9. So you want to go to each box, and this is the time when you actually move your cursor. All the other times you were referring to places in the board using J and I, or I and J, or whatever was in your for loops. This time, when you were checking to see if there was an invalid move, this time you're actually going to move your cursor. So you're going to move your cursor to each box and make sure that there are no zeros inside that box. Okay, and then at each box, you're going to call your error function. Okay, and then your error function is going to make sure that there were no errors surrounding that box. So if your error function works, then we know it's going to check the row, the column, and the box for a similar number. And if it ever returns true, then your game is not won. So your won function should return false. Whenever won encounters an error or a zero, it should return false. And if it never encounters an error or a zero, then it can return true. And when it returns true, you want to display this banner before you return true. Because remember, return statements end the function. So before you return true, you want to show a banner. And again, it's the function show banner. And then you can have a variable that congratulates your user that's a char star type. But if your game is not won, then remember, you've just moved your cursor all over the place. And you don't want your user to find that they want to resume playing the game, but their cursor is somewhere else. Okay, so you want to return the cursor to where it's supposed to be if you've moved it, which you probably will in the won function. Again, there's other ways of doing it. This is just sort of the simplest to articulate with moving the cursor. So if you move the cursor, remember to put it back. Any questions? Yeah.
So do you want it to check if you've won after every move, or do you want the user to say, check if I won?
You want to make sure that you check a win before you allow the user to change anything. Because if the game has been won, you don't want them to change anything. So anytime that they type in something and you're about to replace, so in your case statement or something like that, like before that, you want to make sure that the game isn't already won before you start listening for them to put in numbers. Any other questions? Really, you can ask. It's fine. I know this is a really tricky one. I know you're kind of like, okay, maybe I understand the concepts, but I have no idea how to write it in code. And that's fine. It's going to take you some time to look through the source code, but once you look through the source code, a lot of the things I've said will make more sense, I promise, because they'll already be used in the source code. Yeah. Okay. It just sounds so illogical, because if you're dividing by 3 and then multiplying by 3, but let's say we're here, let's say we're at this part in the board. So we're at 7-1, right? This is 7-1. This is where our 5 is, let's say. And this is where we want to check if there's an error. So now we're going to take our 7, which is where we are right now, we're going to divide it by 3. What are we going to get? 2, and then we're going to multiply it by 3. What are we going to get? And now we know that we have to be at position 6 to be at the first part of that board. So wherever you are in this box, if you take the y coordinate divided by 3 and multiply it by 3, because you're going to lose the remainder, you're going to end up at the top left box of that box. Okay? Do you get it? It's not just, the reason you probably didn't get it is because I was only dividing by 6, and you were like, obviously 6 divided by 3 times 3 is 6. But 7 divided by 3 times 3 in C is also 6. So now you know to go to this box. And the same thing with the 1. So the 1 divided by 3 times 3 is going to return 0 times 0 to 0. So you know that your x-coordinate of the top left box of that box is 0. Yeah? Okay, so then you know you have to go to 6, 0.
Why do you sum by 3? Why is your condition that number plus 3?
It goes, so why is the condition go up to this amount plus 3? And the reason is because you want to increment 2 times. So it's like a for loop where you want it to happen that many times. So once you start here, j is going to increment that. So then j's value is going to be g dot y divided by 3 times 3 plus 1. Then it's going to be plus 2, and then you're done. Anything else? Yeah.
Kind of unrelated question, but is there a way to scroll down in the source code to like a certain line number, like you know you have an error at line 300 instead of just erroring down?
Oh yes. So the question was to scroll down in terminal or in nano. You do Control V, and that'll take you a whole page down. So Control V takes you a page down. Control Y takes you a page up. And now let me just wrap up. I will stay to take more questions, but for those watching at home, we'll just wrap up. We'll see you in lecture. Good luck on the problem set. It is a challenging one, so do leave yourself a good amount of time to do it, and we will be helping you at office hours. So best of luck. And I will stay behind for the questions.
Yeah.